Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. In program number 3, you'll hear from the pianist, composer, and arranger Carla Bley, and from the guitarist, composer, and free improviser Fred Frith. For almost 50 years, the ever-young Carla Bley has continued to sculpt her music through a relentless attention to detail and to balance. From day one, she was on the move. First geographically, when she moved from her native California to New York City in her late teens, just so she could be close to the jazz she loved. And then musically, as she began to develop a body of work that is nothing short of breathtaking in its breadth and depth. She is truly an American original. Speaking of originals, without a doubt, the British-born Fred Frith qualifies as well. His 1974 album Guitar Solos permanently altered the idea of what the guitar can be asked to do, and even today provides inspiration for inquiring guitarists worldwide. His musical vision easily crosses the boundaries between rock, free improvisation, and notated contemporary composition, although as you'll hear, it's rock that's got a hold of his soul. I hope you enjoy the show. If you listened very, very carefully just now, you might have thought that this tune sounds vaguely familiar. If not, just wait a minute, and it will become much more clear when the saxophone comes in. You're listening to the music of Carla Bley from her album The Lost Chords, recorded live in Europe in 2003. Often gently sardonic, always meticulously crafted, and usually revealing of her somewhat shy and mischievously sly personality, Ms. Bley's music is like so many strands woven into a rich tapestry, one that has both the delicacy and the rugged strength of a fine Persian carpet. Yes, it's Three Blind Mice, done only as Carla Bley would do it. Although that's not quite accurate. I'm sure that if there's a jazz heaven, Bley's musical ancestor, Thelonious Monk, is smiling down from above. Born into a family of religious musicians in Oakland, California, in 1938, Carla Bley was playing the piano at a very early age, although as you'll hear, she wasn't always an obedient student.
My father was a piano teacher. I learned to play practically before I learned to walk. You know, it just was part of what came with the birthright. And my father taught me as much as he could until I was eight. Oh, maybe seven. I think I stopped studying when I was seven. And I became unmanageable. And I remember I once bit my mother when she criticized my fingering. I just bit her on the hand. You know, I was horrible. So then they stopped teaching me, and I ran wild, and I'm still running wild, I guess.
Maybe that spirit of independence, of running wild, is what led Bley to jazz in her early teens.
When I was maybe 13, and I went to see Lionel Hampton at the Oakland Auditorium. I'm a West Coast cat. And I went to see Lionel Hampton, and I was just thrilled. When the guys walked down the aisle, flying home or something, it was so much more exciting than the church music that I was used to, and yet it was related to the church music harmonically. The next band I heard was Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker at the Blackhawk. At this point, I wasn't a jazz musician. I was just, I was a roller skater, as a matter of fact. My whole life was consumed by roller skating. And I just went with a friend who had brothers who liked jazz to these events and didn't really start incorporating it into the way I played until I moved to New York when I was 17.
Like so many jazz musicians, both before her and after her, Carla Bley was drawn to the center of the jazz world, to the Big Apple.
I moved to New York because I wanted to be where Miles Davis was, wherever that was, you know. And I got to New York, and that first night I went to Cafe Bohemia and sat there all by myself listening to Miles Davis at the age of 17 and just saying, okay, this is it. This is me. This is me.
While living in a hotel in Times Square, Blake quickly figured out how to immerse herself into the jazz she wanted to hear and to make a living at the same time.
The next day I went to Birdland and got a job as a cigarette girl, yeah. I had the tray around my neck, and I was standing in front of the bandstand refusing to sell to anybody during solos, you know. I'd say, shh.
Did you get fired?
No, I didn't get fired, but they demoted me to stuffed animal girl. And then I was so bad at that they put me in the cloakroom. And I seemed to do pretty well in the cloakroom because I could just, you know, sort of listen out of the one ear to everything that was going on without people disturbing me, because they only gave me their coats before and after the show. That was the ideal job.
One night at Birdland, the pianist Paul Bley, who didn't smoke, bought a pack from the cigarette girl, who was then known as Carla Borg. They soon became musical collaborators and husband and wife as well.
I think I really did start seriously writing when I met Paul Bley. I guess I was about 17 or 18 then. 17. I started performing, if you can call it that, in public when I moved. You know, everywhere Paul Bley went, if he had two gigs, he would accept them and give me one. So I would just, you know, he would take two gigs for New Year's Eve and I would have to do one. I could hardly play. And the rest of the band, whoever it was, would just complain and complain, and I'd be so nervous.
She might have been nervous in those early days, but that didn't stop her from developing her work as a composer, arranger, and performer in 100 different directions. A long list of musicians have recorded her tunes. Paul Bley, George Russell, Jimmy Giuffre, Art Farmer, Gary Burton, and Charlie Hayden. As a pianist, she has performed with some of the most original and challenging musicians in jazz history. Pharoah Sanders, Roswell Rudd, Archie Shepp, Milford Graves, and Steve Lacy. In 1974, pianist Keith Jarrett, conductor Dennis Russell Davies, and the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra performed her chamber work entitled 3-4. 3 years earlier, though, came the piece that stands as one of the monuments of large ensemble jazz, her epic opera, Escalator Over the Hill.
Thank you.
Among the glowing reviews of Escalator Over the Hill, one of which favorably compared it to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's, perhaps Downbeat magazine put it best, a masterpiece, to put it mildly. Composed and recorded over a three-year period, Escalator Over the Hill was released as a three-disc set on the Jazz Composers Orchestra label Blay and trumpeter Michael Mantler had formed. Now available on CD and distributed by ECM, Escalator Over the Hill is a must-hear for anyone interested in the evolution of post-1960s jazz. It had a cast of, well, not thousands, but almost. Just listen to these names from the creative edges of jazz and rock. Trombonist Roswell Rudd, tenor saxophonist Gatto Barbieri, rock icon Jack Bruce from Cream, Mahavishnu John McLaughlin, Viva from Andy Warhol's Factory, Ornette Coleman collaborators Don Cherry and Charlie Hayden, ex-mother of invention Don Preston, and the angelic voice of Linda Ronstadt. And there it is again, that irrepressible sense of mischief, the humor of Carla Bley. Her music pulls on your heartstrings one minute, challenges your musical expectations in another, and tickles your funny bone the next. Bley's work with her current quartet, heard here playing her tune Tropical Depression, traces back to the early 1990s when she began playing duets with bassist Steve Swallow. The group evolved naturally from there.
I had a duet with Steve Swallow for about 5 years, and then I found that was really too difficult. I felt so unprotected on stage and naked. So I added Andy Shepherd, who took a lot of the weight off of me. He was a superior soloist and could, like, you know, stand out there in front where I sort of cowered behind the piano. And then, since we had just added Billy Drummond to the big band and liked him a lot, I thought the next logical step is to add Billy to the trio.
As a longtime fan of Bley's music, I was very surprised when she told me that all of her early music, including the tunes recorded by Paul Bley, such as Ida Lupino, Closer, King Korn, Around Again, and Syndrome, were composed completely by ear. At the time, Bley knew nothing about the harmonic structures found in most jazz standards, like All the Things You Are and Satin Doll. It was only much later in her career, under the tutelage of Steve Swallow, that Bley learned about 2-5-1 chord changes and extended jazz harmonies. Her advice, though, to young musicians is to listen, listen, listen.
Listening, that's the way we learn, by listening. And even when you're young, you say, I don't like that person. I can't stand John Coltrane. Well, you're defining yourself by that, and you're getting, well, if you can't stand him, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, how are you going to say something that means more than that? And so it's really important to listen, find your place, and start climbing up.
Climbing up. That's exactly what Carla Bley has done over her long and storied career, bringing listeners around the world a treasure trove of music to savor and enjoy. Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Over 30 years ago, Fred Frith took the guitar where it had never gone before. Everyone has indelible memories they'll never forget. I'm sure you have many of your own. One of mine is hearing Fred Frith for the first time. It was the summer of 1978 in Phil Hayes' living room in South Minneapolis. As soon as Phil put the needle down on the turntable and the very first note of Hello Music reached my ears, I was entranced and intrigued. What is this? I thought. Well, that question has many different answers, depending on who you talk to. For Frith, who grew up playing violin, piano, guitar, bass, and just about any other instrument he could lay his hands on, and who had most recently been playing acoustic guitar in a folk music context, the process began when he went away to college.
I guess when I went up to university for the first time, I met a couple of people who were contemporary music students, and they introduced me to a whole new world that I had no idea existed.
John Cage
and Stockhausen and all kinds of people. I used to sneak into their lectures and hear people, you know, talking about what they were doing, and it was a complete mystery to me and very exciting too.
Frith had grown up in an English household where music was a big part of everyday life. Classical, jazz, rock, pop, you name it, he had heard it. But when he heard the brash avant-garde experimentalism by composers such as the American John Cage and the German Karlheinz Stockhausen, he was inspired to begin conducting his own experiments that took the guitar into totally uncharted territory. Following in the tradition of John Cage's prepared piano, Frith modified the guitar by attaching alligator clips and other objects to the strings, and by playing it with objects other than a guitar pick. He also developed other new ways of getting sound out of a guitar.
As an acoustic guitar player who had some experience with the electric instrument from playing in bands, I was kind of curious about the fact that when you tap on an acoustic guitar, Spanish acoustic guitar, you hear this note that's not being amplified by this body, it's actually coming from the other side of the left hand, but it's quite loud. And I thought that would be interesting to see what would happen if you could make that as loud as the other note in this experimental vein that I was learning from contemporary music. So I vandalized a telephone and took the microphone out of a telephone and taped it on the headstock of the guitar to see if I could make those notes louder by putting them into an amplifier. And in a way, that was kind of like a start of a process that's never stopped. I mean, once you do something as off the wall as that, then anything can be, you know, a possible source of sound. And eventually I realized that a pickup over the neck of an electric guitar would be a much more efficient way to amplify that extra note that I could hear, and so I incorporated that. And then using volume pedals so that I could suppress it when I didn't want to hear it, and you know, gradually building a setup which I still use today really a guitar as a kind of a self-contained orchestra.
Ironically, the album Guitar Solos, that resulted from all of this experimentation, was commissioned by a very unlikely source, Virgin Records, the major label known today more for its releases by the Rolling Stones and Janet Jackson. As it happened, Frith had formed the experimental rock band Henry Cow with saxophonist and keyboardist Tim Hodgkinson, and they had released their first album on Virgin when it was a brand new label in 1973.
When Henry Cow had signed to Virgin Records, they got excited about the idea of me doing a solo record, and I think what they really wanted was to develop me as a guitar hero. Because in the language of publicists and record companies, I was the kind of person that they would then focus on and build my career.
Eric Clapton.
They had this kind of fantasy, and they thought I was going to make this kind of guitar hero kind of record in a rock vein. And my idea of it was, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for me to basically set aside some time and see what a guitar can actually do. So for me, it was a way to push myself to explore as I never had before. And I gave myself a deadline when I was going to go in the studio. And in the weeks before, I just sat at home trying stuff out. And it included preparing the guitar. But when I hear the record now, I realize how much of it isn't prepared. That a lot of that record doesn't have, you know, the alligator clips and the chopsticks and stuff. A lot of that came later. What I was doing then was really exploiting the pickup at the wrong end of the neck, and what would happen if you put a capo on the guitar and separated the guitar into two completely separate instruments with separate treatments on each side and working with that. So it's like this idea that you actually have two instruments at once, and guitar solo sounds sometimes like it can't be one instrument.
Oh, absolutely.
People assume that it was all full of overdubs or, you know. But it's all just exploring this process, and that's kind of the technique that I still use, this two guitar in one technique, and it's a technique that nobody else has actually really developed. So right now I'm working with students where I teach at Mills College who are starting to get interested in this, but I've known enough in the past of people who got interested in it and then tried to do it and realized that it actually took work. And then, you know, they kind of, after a while, they drop it again. So I don't know if this will survive me, but it's a particular way of looking at the guitar, which is pretty, for me, pretty interesting and fulfilling, and I don't really need to go anywhere else. It's like it stood me well.
But playing the guitar is not all Fred Frith does. In 1978, after 5 years of touring and recording with Henry Cow, Frith moved to New York City, where he immediately connected with the downtown music scene, meeting and working with John Zorn, Tom Cora, Bill Laswell, and many others. Then, after 13 years in New York, he moved to California with his family, where he now teaches at Mills College in Oakland. Since arriving in America, he's composed music for many different ensembles, such as the saxophone quartet Rova and the Arditi String Quartet. Right now you're hearing Rova play Freedom Is Your Friends 2 from the album Freedom and Fragments on John Zorn's Zadok label.
Freedom in Fragments, which is the last piece I wrote for them, is a suite of pieces. I think there are 23 pieces in all. Some of them are very short, some of them are much longer, and they come at the literature of the saxophone from many different angles. So some of it is recognizably coming from a bebop tradition or even from a 30s lush harmony tradition, but I'm also well aware of the edge that they can bring to that material, so they're constantly being given the freedom to push against the territory that is being set out and turn it into something else.
Frith also writes for strings other than the guitar. The Arditi Quartet is one of the world's premier ensembles dedicated to the performance of contemporary music. Last year, they released a 2-CD set of Frith's music for string quartet and trio, including his first string quartet composed in 1990. This is the first movement of Lelekovitsa, which is dedicated to Eva Batova, the Czechoslovakian violinist and singer. But rock, especially rock on the edges, is never far from Frith's heart. Shortly after moving to New York, Frith formed a power trio with bassist Bill Laswell and drummer Fred Marr. Frith has said that Massacre was formed to play the kind of loud and energetic racket that you hear in clubs. Today, with drummer Charles Hayward, Massacre is still doing it the loud and energetic way. When I asked Frith what he foresees for his music in the near future, he told me that what he most wants to do is to form a new rock band. Then he explained where that answer came from.
After I'd been at Mills teaching composition with this fancy title and having all these, you know, learned colleagues and stuff, I realized that, you know, the most important thing I can impart to my students is to be who you are and not pretend who you're not. And I became aware of how many students, when they apply, are telling you what they think you want to hear, and that's usually not at all what they're really doing, because they think to go to a music school you have to be showing that you can write a string quartet. And I'm actually much more interested in their ability to be who they are and to do something with it. And then I started applying that to myself, and I thought, well, you know, I never went to music school, and I've written string quartets, but it's not really the center of my work, so maybe I should practice what I preach. And I come from a rock background, so why aren't I doing it? I'm telling all these students to be who they are, and I'm not being who I am. So here we go. Los Angeles for Notes from the Western Edge. I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.